Today I'm sitting in the office in Shanghai with Mark Vander Chase, who is the CEO of Steel Games. And has also worked in a pretty interesting startup called Tudou, which is one of the top video sites, basically the YouTube for China. Mark, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You want to tell us a little bit about you and like who you are and where you come from?
Yeah, I'm Dutch originally, 36 years old, married with two kids, and been in China for about 10 years now. Came here originally working for a multinational, for Daimler Chrysler, was a controller for them here in Northeast Asia. Did it for a couple of years, and I saw a lot of opportunities actually around me that I couldn't really do. I saw a lot of activities going on, a lot of chances in the market, things I could do that I couldn't do while working for a multinational. So I decided in 2002 to quit my expat job, to quit my good life with a nice car and nice house and business class flights all over the world, and basically go back to a small apartment with a bicycle and study Chinese for a while. And that's what I did, and I started studying Chinese in September 2002. At university. My idea was to do it for 1 year and then sort of see if I could, set my own business. But, how things go, after about 1 month I realized that just Chinese full-time is not my thing. I was finished basically at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with my studies, and you still have a day left, and I used to work already long hours while working for a multinational, so I felt like, I still have a day left, so let's already set up a business right now. So after one month already, I started setting up my business next to my studies, and that started to go better and better. That sort of took off, and then I had a problem because I had gone business trips, for example, had to meet clients. I was doing consulting, basically, consulting and trading with Europe, also with the US. And, I started to get some clients and go on business trips. And then the university told me, you cannot just take classes off. It's very, the universities here in China are very, very formal in a way. You have to really be in class at 8 a.m. If you come to class at 8:01, they will, you have to apologize in front of the whole class to say why you're late. And so, if you're just going to not be there for a few days, they accepted once maybe, but the second time they tell you, sorry, either you study or you don't study. Mm. And it doesn't matter whether you have good results or not. So I studied Chinese, and I had to make a choice basically then quite quickly. What am I going to do? Either continue my studies or set up my business. I decided, I'm going to finish my semester, the first semester of Chinese, and then work full time. So that's what I did. Basically, in January 2003, I quit my studies and started my real first business full time. And we're now more than six years down the road, and done a lot of things over the years.
In 6 years, you've done more than a few things. This is an interview I've been really looking forward to doing, because Mark is living in China as an expat. He's obviously not Chinese. You can't see, I guess you can see that from the photos, but he's really not. And he's worked on a pretty big site in the past, and it sounds like his current venture is doing pretty good stuff too. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about Tudou and how it works, and just like some of the basic stats, so that's kind of for people that have never heard of it before can understand it.
Well, Tudou is basically comparable to what YouTube's doing in the US. The main difference is we're doing it in China, and we're only doing it in China. All our servers are inside China. That means the site is very slow outside China. But basically, the content is similar in a way that it's a lot of user-generated content, but it's also a lot of professional produced content. So there's TV shows, there's movies. Originally, a lot of pirated. Nowadays, we try and make deals with everybody we don't want to be the biggest pirate site in the world or something. We want to be a legal site with legal content. So we try to make as many deals as possible with people that put with content on the site.
What kind of traffic does it have?
It's pretty big. We have about 85 million uniques per month. It's only China traffic, of course. Mm-hmm. I think we play about 3 billion clips a month on the site. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it's smaller than YouTube. I mean, YouTube has a lot more unique users,
right?
But our users actually watch a lot much longer time. They go to the site a lot longer than the YouTube watchers do. If you look at YouTube, it's I don't know what the exact stats are, but probably around 10 minutes per session. Mm-hmm. On Tudou, it's more like an hour per session. So at least 6 times longer per session than YouTube.
And so what kind of stuff are they watching?
Well, they watch a lot more TV content. It's more like substitute for television, much more than YouTube is, because there's a lot more TV shows. There's a lot more movies on there. We have our own HD channel. Called Gedo, which is a subdomain of Tudou. That's really professionally produced content that's given to us, distributed to us by the producers themselves, which is getting some traction at the moment, which is really high quality, a bit like Hulu actually, but Hulu is in the US. That's basically that's equivalent to what we're doing here with Gedo. And that's what people like to watch. It's much more than just the funny clips that you see a lot on YouTube. They're there as well, but it's just one part of it. And professionally produced content is much more important. And that's also the direction we're going into ourselves. We are co-producing feature films at the moment. We do invest in some own productions,
So it's actually becoming a TV network, like ABC or CBS.
Yeah, but on the internet. You can compare it maybe a bit with what HBO has been doing when they started. HBO started investing as well in own productions. Mm-hmm. And we really think that's where the future is of online video. It's not really in the user-generated content. I mean, that will be there always. But it's a lot of people really always want to watch. It's more like sharing your things with people. But the real future of online video is in professional produced content. So, you need to build a brand. I think HBO did an excellent job. I mean, if you watch an HBO show, if you hear something as HBO, it's high quality. That's what we want to achieve as well, I think, with Tudou in the future.
And so, like, what kind of content are you trying to make?
It's a mix of feature films of high quality, what you call television content, basically. Content that's new, that's innovative, that's, that may otherwise not be produced.
I mean, like, in where I live in Latin America, novellas are very popular. Like, women's soap operas, you doing that kind of stuff?
We work together as well with SMG on a soap opera. Yeah. It's different things. It's not just one thing.
And stuff that fits Chinese culture.
Of course, yeah. I mean, we're looking at the Chinese market here. I mean, if you look at, for example, content on Tsubo, people watch, it's actually mainly Chinese, Korean, some Japanese and some Hong Kong movies and films, TV shows. It's not the American things. I mean, if you look at American movies, American TV shows, it's maybe 5% or something of the website. So people always think, that Tudo is really showing all the American TV shows. And they're on there, probably, but people don't really watch them. People in China want to see their own content, their own Asian content. That's what they're watching. So that's what we're focusing on as well.
So, in terms of the content, like, how does the legality of it all work?
I mean, basically, what it is... When we started, it was just user-generated content. So we never really thought about the fact that people upload illegal stuff. Because we were really one of the first people doing these things. And when the first shows appeared, we were like, okay, what do we do? I basically took the decision to wait and see what would happen. And when the first people came to us and asked us to take it down, we said, okay, we can take it down. We will take it down right away. I mean, that's for sure. If people ask us to take it down, we'll take it down right away. But we also approached them directly then with a revenue share deal. Say, okay, you cannot get your stuff on television in China because it's heavily... It's very difficult to get things on television, to get through the censors, get through the system. Only a few films can be on television and in movie theaters every year. So, if people watch things in China, they watch it on illegal DVDs, which you don't earn a penny on. At least today you can earn, maybe a penny or whatever. It's a small amount at first, it can add up because everything was perfect. And that kind of deals we're trying to make as much as possible right now. And that does work, actually.
How do content producers react to that? Are they saying, like, well, nothing, something's better than nothing? I mean, don't they say, well, never mind, you're just devaluing my content?
No, I mean, they're also seeing the future of shows is online for a large part. I mean, it depends on the producer for us. There's people who don't want to do it. But I think many of them are seeing that, we are a big platform for different tiny audiences. And it gives them a way to give some additional monetization. If they don't work with us, the shows maybe on another site, we watch it there, and they cannot do a revenue share deal. And we can offer them more stuff. If it's really good content, it could end up on Gado and in that HD quality. It's not just people uploading it illegally. It's also, we offer a lot more than that.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess I can relate to it because I haven't had TV in 7 or 8 years. Right. And I get all my TV up in my 5 years, exclusively. so I can certainly relate to what's going on.
It's getting easier and easier.
It certainly has been harder. Yeah. I'm interested that you mentioned Hulu, which is only for use in the US. People access it from China without a problem?
No, well, you can use it through VPN, of course. That's right. Possible, but it's, no, people don't really watch much, I think.
It's just like you want to keep up with time.
Yeah, but it's too slow, actually. It's, right. Even through VPN, it doesn't really work. And they're closing down some ports as well, making it more difficult to watch through VPNs. And, actually, I don't really watch anything on the internet. Too busy watching doing more work, actually. And I have a family of two kids.
Fair enough. How do you compare Tudo to PP Live?
Well, PP Live is a peer-to-peer network, and Tudo only is a very small peer-to-peer threshold. We also peer-to-peer. We have some peer-to-peer in there. But Tudo is really a community site, the site where everything's on there, where there's a lot of direct streaming, mm-hmm. So normally they're better quality. Available directly when you want to watch it. It's a different site. But I think it's kind of a question that you should ask Gary. I mean, Gary's really the guy who's running Tudo. He's more the, I'm on the board of Tudo. I'm not active over operation in the company.
Right.
So if you really want to go into detail about your things, it's probably better to get talking to Gary.
Fair enough. I'm interested in, maybe can we just talk a little bit about how you got started there and how you found working here as an expat? Because you're not Chinese. No. How fluent are you in Chinese now?
Not fluent. It's, I can get along.
Can you write?
About 1,000 characters. Yeah. So it's basic things. I can read the basics, write the basics. I'm able to get around, but it's basic.
So how did you find your partner Gary to get started, and how did that work? I mean, don't they look at you as an expat and say, well, you don't understand culture, you don't understand what real Chinese people want, you don't speak the language, you can't use the science properly, how do you really contribute value? But clearly you have.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when I met Gary, I've been in China for 5 years already, 6 years, five years. So I was not new to China. I was not like somebody who just landed on a plane and wanted to do something. I've been here for a while. I already set up 2 companies actually by that time. Been doing fairly well, and not extremely well, but doing fairly well. It was different from most of the expats that this game came here and sort of set a game plan, strike a bridge here. That was not my plan at all. I just had some ideas. Maybe I met Gary by coincidence during the first Formula One race here in Shanghai. We sat next to each other and had a beer afterwards. We sort of felt like whatever, we sort of liked each other and decided to play golf together a few weeks later. And during that round of golf, I told him about my ideas for actually for podcasting websites. It was the original idea that we had for Trudeau. And he also liked it, and, you know.
What was he doing at the time?
He was working with Bertelsmann, the German publisher, doing strategy for them. And he liked it, actually, and, you know, we decided to set something up, and basically it went October 2004, and 3 months later the company was officially formalized, and Gary quit his job, so a daytime job, and he started running the company, and it's April 2005 he went live, and from there it's just one big quote, actually, that we see. It's,
actually, that's something, if you don't mind, are you willing to talk about some of the scalability and how you dealt with that in the early days?
Well, that's also more Gary, actually. Is it? Yeah, technical. Gary's a technical guy, okay. So I don't know anything about technical things. It's, I can program a website, and but that's about it.
So what was your, what did you focus on in business? What was your area?
It's more, more ideas, looking at early financing, looking at, basically looking at enough of the things happening on the web. That's what I'm still doing, actually, you know, reading lots of weblogs, reading, talking to people, finding out, you know, what's going to happen on the internet in the future. I guess I'm somebody who's always looking at new things, having new ideas. I literally have probably one business idea a day, every day. How can you integrate them? Where do I see things going? What might not work? And people have to stop me sometimes because I have too many ideas. Mm. That's a bit of a danger. I have a problem with focusing on just this one thing. So I think that's where a lot of my added value is often, is finding new ideas and
getting people excited about it.
Getting the team excited to do things. If I look at my current company here, Shield Games, it's really getting people to motivate them to start looking at new things, implement them. I like to work with small teams. I don't like big companies, actually. Even this company is way too big for me, actually. I prefer a small, like 20 person team. That's fine. If you have a good management team, you can have a big company, but right now I don't have a very strong management team, so it's kind of difficult to when a company grows to really manage it. And I prefer to work in small teams and look at strategy, do enough of things and do some PR. It's sort of thing I really like to do, but operating a big company like this, it's sort of not really my thing to do.
Is that why you really left off?
No, it's actually, I've never been full-time involved in Trudeau, because I have another company still running on the site. Mm. I was still involved in consulting, I was doing trading, and I decided not to become fully involved in Trudeau on a full-time basis for the simple reason that, there were different reasons, but the main reason was actually that I felt it was a very Chinese company, and I didn't really feel like, it wasn't international yet as it is right now. The language was Chinese, the culture was very Chinese, and I sort of felt, that's not the thing for me. Gary's a great guy, he's my best friend, actually, and I also felt, working with him might not be good for our friendship in the long run. That's another thing. I like to run a company. He's clearly much better as a CEO than I am for Trudeau. So there's no reason why I would ever think I could do a CEO job, but Trudeau, he's the one who's doing it and he's doing it perfectly well. So then other opportunities came along, and I was thinking about Chill Games, and I felt like that's actually something I can really do and build it myself, and so that's what I did. But I'm still involved with Trudeau as a board member, of course.
Right. What are your thoughts about Chill Games?
Yeah. Well, Chill Games is actually originally a Dutch company. Mm-hmm. It was started by two Dutch guys in 2001. They lost out in the early days, affiliate deals, chatting, all these kind of things. And from about 2004 onward, they decided to look at online games as flash games. And they built some flash game websites, mainly in Europe at the time. And then in 2005, they started to look at more international markets. And then they contacted me later in 2005 and asked me, help us set up a website for us in China. And I said, probably could do that. So consulting gig, basically. That's how I saw it first. And I met them, and I really thought these guys had very good ideas. They really understand the online game market. They really understand what drives traffic, what drives game sites to become bigger. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do this for you guys, and I'm going to do it for a few months probably and see how it goes. But then when I started doing it, I was building the first website here and trying to get the licenses and all these things in China, I realized actually the game market is going to be huge. So after about 1 or 2 months probably, I called them and I said, guys, I'm doing it part-time right now. I think I want to do this full-time. I think I see a huge opportunity here, but I want to do it independently. I'm not going to be like a subsidiary of the bank companies. Let me handle this here. Basically, they invest money in the company. Let me run it. Don't interfere too much with it. That was the original deal. Then it became a bit bigger than we originally thought. Because the original idea was to build one website in China. We're now having two big portals here. We're probably number two in the market for flash games at this point. Mm-hmm. It's about 32 million uniques per month. Yeah. We have a game studio here now. There's about 50 people making flash games. Probably the biggest flash game studio in the world. Because I'm not sure if they never saw any bigger ones, but maybe. We produce 1 or 2 games a week at the moment.
1 or 2 new games?
New games a week, yes. It's like a factory almost. We run websites in India, Indonesia. Indonesia, we're number one at the moment, actually, in the flash game market. Malaysia, we just started in Japan. We do it all from here. It's basically the center of online games here in China for the Asian market. It's fun. It's a market with a huge potential, It's a fun market. I mean, I'm not a big game player myself. I mean, I don't really watch videos, so I don't know if there are games here. I
play the fun, come on.
Yeah, the thing is for me, it's always, I love to play my Shadow of Nintendo DS and PSV, yeah? But it's I feel like I only have 24 hours in a day, and it's just, I do it when I don't have anything else to do. Like for mobile games, for example, I love because those I use when I'm waiting for an airplane, for a train, or waiting in line somewhere.
Yeah, my fun.
I used to, I changed to G1 2-3 months ago.
Alright, yeah, I mean, I play too many games online.
Yeah, it's so easy now. The apps you can download, and that's what I spend a lot of money on, actually. That's fun. But I mean, you know, playing like MMO games for me, I really wouldn't do it because I know I'm going to be hooked on that. It's going to take too much time.
Can you kind of help me understand the market for gaming? Now, this is a market called casual gaming, so people log into a website, play a flash game. I guess I should be embarrassed for teasing you about it because I don't play any of these games either. I used to, when I was growing up, play every game that I could on the Commodore 64 and
Just like me.
Okay. And now don't. What is casual gaming, and what's the business model behind it?
Well, to start with casual gaming, if you play Commodore 64 games, basically I often explain to people it's similar to those games you had on Commodore 64. You know, they're normally single player, some multiplayer games, but relatively simple games. A couple of levels only. Quality is a bit better, of course, than graphics had on 64, because 64 you had 64K available. Now these games are 300-400K, sometimes even more than that. So the graphics are a little better. Mm-hmm. But they're still simple. They're still fun. They're fun to play. You play them for 10, 20 minutes maybe. Then you do something different. It's not something you play for hours, like World of Warcraft or one of the big MMO games. The business model at this point is still mainly advertising. Mm-hmm. Either advertising around the game or advertising inside the game. Mm-hmm. Can be, for example, a pre-roll before you start playing the game, or inside the game that you billboards, for example, inside the game. But mainly it's around the game. So you click on the game and before, and then it opens a small window, and around the window you see some banners, for example. That's at this point still in the main business model. But I see the business model changing to virtual items more and more. People will not pay for these games because they're too cheap, I guess. But people may want to play for additional levels, for example. When they play 4 or 5 levels, the game is finished, and they have to pay like 25 cents or whatever to get 3 more levels. They may do this. If you build into a social network, either your own social network or play them on Facebook, for example, people may be willing to pay more to get a better sword or a better car or whatever to get a high score, but to beat their friends.
Right.
Those are things actually. I think that's going to be a new revenue stream for flash games. You see that already in the big massive multiplayer online games.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also going to be something in a more simple flash games. So
because the problem with the simple games, I would imagine, is people aren't as engaged. So it's less critical for them to pay money for things.
Sure. Yeah. That's why social network around is more important. Mm-hmm. Then people might be willing to do it. And or when they're more hooked to a game, after game only has 5 levels, there's 3 more. You can see that in the game, but you cannot enter them. So you have to tease them a little bit, and then they're willing to pay a small amount.
Right.
And it really is not paying like $5, it's really like a quarter, 50 cents, whatever. Really something that people feel like, okay, well, it doesn't really matter if I pay a quarter right now.
It's a risk market model, right? I mean, you give people a taste of something that gives them a huge amount of value and cost them for something relatively insignificant relative to the value, and then they'll do it.
Yeah, correct. And so people don't really do it yet. I mean, there's two companies working on it at the moment, and I think that's something we should be in as well. And the other thing for casual games is it's going to be big on all the phones, so I believe.
Right.
It's still not that big. I mean, you have, of course, the apps on the iPhone, but I think still games will do a lot more in that field.
So I guess you'd love to see Flash on the iPhone.
It will be there eventually, I hope. I mean, we're waiting for it for 3 years now, but
don't hold your breath, huh?
Well, at least Android's doing it now, and they're going with Flash, and Nokia has it for it. Eventually, Apple has to, I think. I mean, if they don't, it's going to be a problem for the iPhone.
There's too much in the App Store, though. Where do you see that going? That's a really interesting question. Right? I mean, the App Store is turning into a multi-billion-dollar model.
Yeah.
They're not going to want to just throw that away.
It won't. No, I mean, it will be there. I mean, the thing is, you can integrate Flash games with the App Store, of course. It doesn't mean that everything's going to be for free.
So people would pay to use Flash, for example?
That's going to be free and paid to Flash game, I think. I mean, basic ones going to be free. More and more advanced ones will be for $99 cents or whatever. That's what I think. I don't think Apple is not using Flash because of the App Store. It's really because they feel that the iPhone is not strong enough to really give the user experience that you want to have.
Right.
And maybe with the new iPhone 3GS, it may be different. But I don't know what the specs are. Maybe that will be the chance to finally get Flash running on there.
Hmm. Interesting. And so the model today, is the company profitable? I mean, you raise money to get started. How's it working out? I know there's some restrictions like you talk about. Tell us what you feel like you can tell.
Well, I mean, basically, it depends on how much you spend on marketing. That's how much you want to grow and how much you spend on marketing. It's we're making money. We're spending a lot of money on marketing to grow further. Because in the Chinese market, I feel it's now is the time to grow.
Mm-hmm.
If you sit down and relax and think, things are going well, the people are going to pass you left and right. You have to keep on growing and investing in the company. So it all depends on how much you want to spend on marketing. And we decide to spend almost everything that we earn, put it back into the market. Marketing through building new good games, marketing through being present on direct websites. We don't really use things like Google Ads or Baidu Ads. But, you know, be out there. People should know you at some point.
So what other kind of channels are you using for marketing? When you say marketing, are you doing brand type advertising? Are you
It's more branding, actually. A lot of what we do is actually, we use our games to do marketing. So we build new games, give these away for free to other websites, they put them on there. And then these websites are competitors, basically. They have free content, but they've branded, which is our website, game.com.cn. So people see one or two new games a week, every week, on their website where they normally play games. And eventually they will click on our logo, because the logo is in our clickable in the games. They come to our site and they realize, well, actually game.com.cn is a lot better than the site I currently play on. And that's for us a major reason why we've grown so much over the past two to three years.
As you do these sorts of campaigns, are you like tracking response rates around things? Like when you buy advertising, how do you know that's effective?
We track everything. We look where the traffic come from. We don't go in extreme detail, but you know, we look at for each campaign, you know, what's the return we're getting, how many people keep on coming back. We track those things. So I think that's very important, because you know, some sites don't really, you know, they may be cheap, but they don't deliver you any traffic. Other sites are more expensive or extremely expensive, some, but they're worth it.
Right. Yeah. What have you found have been some of the more effective places to advertise?
The best one used to be a site called How123, which is like a directory site, a bit like Yahoo in the early days. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of traffic over the first 2 years. We stopped actually advertising on there because it became too expensive. Hmm. They increased their rate cards by 50% per year, not for a year, for half a year probably. It's you know, each half year they become 50% more expensive. Hmm. At a certain point, we just said, okay, forget it. It's just not worth it anymore. It's just, it's not, you know. But that helps a lot for the branding, actually. You have to be on there when you're new in the market. A lot of people who are new to the internet in China go there. So they go for the first time on the internet, they go there to find the right place to play games, watch videos, and you know, do other things online. So you have to be there first to build your brand, and for people to get to know you.
You don't force users to register?
We don't force them. But many people do, because it's, you know, they can chat on the website and the forums. They can.
Do you have an average spend per user? Like, what's the metric you use to know that a media buyer on a site is useful?
Sorry,
what's the metric you use? Mm-hmm. Like, is it a lot of stuff we use is cost per lead or cost mm-hmm. per sale or cost per acquisition in some form? What's like the metric you use to know that okay, buying no, from this site worked and this site didn't?
We basically look at how many new IPs come to the website. We don't really track it on a cost per user basis. Mm-hmm. It's more like we give ourselves some budget per month, and we look at, you know, which sites have a lot of new users for us that we haven't seen yet before, and we spend some money on that. We don't really calculate on a per user basis. So.
Right.
But to get back to force people to sign up. For example, we have a password function on the website mm-hmm. that works for all the subdomains, because we do a lot more than just flash games, actually. We have browser-based games on the side, we have mobile games. We have a sort of Chinese version of Kongregate, which is where developers can put up their own flash games, mm-hmm. And you know, we monetize for them, we distribute them for them. All these things work with one central login. So if you want to use these different parts of the site, it makes sense to really log into it, to really, you know, benefit a lot more from it. And a lot of people do it. We have millions of people who register for the website. Yeah. It's pretty big.
And you have like reserves and things as well?
No.
It's always online.
It's online. It's people come back. They know we have new games all the time. I think that's one of the most important things for a website, a game website. Every single day your site should be different. People who come back every day, they want to see different games. So, you know, we like a lot of games.
How many games have we got?
On the side, how we have? Mm. Thousands.
Thousands?
Thousands, yeah.
And what's the most popular game?
The most popular is probably, there's a few ones. This one is called Uphill Rush. It's doing extremely well. It's been doing well for months, actually, already. It's basically you're riding a dirt bike, and you have to make, you know, it's like a core, and you jump, and you make loopings and whatever, and you know, you race against others. It's extremely addictive, because you can do a lot of different tricks, and you know, you can beat your own time, you can beat your friends. If you're good enough, you can go to the next level. People keep on playing, so they can do the next level, and when once at the next level, they have to be, you know, even better to get to the next level. And it's people keep on coming back. It's extremely addictive.
Was there a guy that made that here in your office?
Yeah, they're here. Yeah. Mm.
I mean, so you have some really good guys here. So do you have guys that consistently turn out top games?
No,
or it just seems to be more of a fluke.
It depends on the main thing is the game designer who designs the game. The concept is a concept. That's very important. And then the person who decides the way it looks. What does the game look like? You know, the graphics, the gameplay. It's not really about who programs it. The programmer has to be good, but you know, it's more like what's you know, how
like the director of a movie. So
that's
all. Yeah.
That's most important. Yeah.
It's an art.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interviewing. I'm going to mispronounce the name, but I'm going to be interviewing Kaishin 001 next week. And they have a game called Vegetable Patch. I guess it's like one of the most popular games in China at the moment. I'm interested in that. What do you think of that game? And then is that a sort of thing? Have you knocked that game off? And how do knockoffs work in China? Mm.
We haven't knocked it off. Of course, I'm looking at it because they're extremely successful. Mm. I mean,
actually, just for those listening, so Vegetable Patch, I'll be getting into that game in more detail. But basically, the concept is that your you have a house with a vegetable patch behind your house, and your neighbors come over and try and steal the vegetables from the vegetable patch, and you've got to try and stop them from stealing vegetables. I think that's right, isn't it?
That's right.
It's very popular in China.
Well, there's a couple of these games, actually, along different sides. The original ones are similar to parking wars, actually, where you park cars on your own street. You buy cars, you park them on your own street, but you try to park them, you have to pay for it to park on your own. So you want to park it on another street, your friend's street, for example, and if you don't pay to park, as long as they don't find it out, you can park for free, but they find out, they give you a fine. So basically what you do is, you wait until your friend's on a business trip or in a meeting, you park your car during a meeting there, so friends can check their internet connection, come out there and check their street. That's basically how these games start. Vegetable badges, similar to this, actually. In a way, you have to go there and steal things when people are watching you. It's a very viral game. And it's something we don't have to do at this point. We're looking at it, of course. Kaishin is actually also putting these games on different websites. We don't have it on our side, but we're thinking about maybe doing something with them in this field.
Mm. So how do knockoffs work here, and how do you guys defend against them, and how do you knock things off yourself? And I imagine if what happens and what everybody does, or can you maybe give me a perspective?
It's not a big deal. I mean, people copy all the time. That's fine. As long as we always think that we probably have better game design, better gameplay. So this copying is not enough. You need more. You really need some innovation. You need to understand the gameplay. If people copy our games, fine. Go ahead. It doesn't really matter. That's also why we give away our games, actually. We feel that if we give away our games, we have branding. If people copy them, the gameplay won't be as good as our gameplay, so it doesn't really hurt us that much. People realize probably that's the branded games that we distribute over the internet are a lot better than people who copy our games.
And so when you say distribute, like YouTube allows you to embed a video in a different web page. Do you have that ability with games as well?
We do.
So I can put a game on my blog and say, this is my favorite game.
Correct. Yeah, you can do this. Yeah. That works well. I mean, it's just distribution. It's just, it's not about just one side anymore. It's about being out there with your brands, and then people eventually will come back to your site. That's what I believe in. It's sending people away will lead to more people coming to your site eventually.
Maybe we can try and embed one of the top games in your review.
Sure. It's possible. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna... There was just a game law change just the other day in China about no more gold farming.
Yeah.
Can you maybe talk about that and if that has any implications for you guys?
It doesn't really have a big implication at this point. Basically, what they're saying is you can still use virtual currency, but you cannot change it to real life things. You cannot use virtual currency to buy real objects or change it for real money. They want to make sure that virtual currency stays virtual. That's the biggest thing. It doesn't really make much of a change for us at this point. There's still going to be a lot of companies doing this on the sites illegally with your currency. So there'll be other people setting up websites where your currency can be changed for real currency, probably.
Was it expected that this all was going to happen?
Yeah, it's been talked about it for 2 years. I mean, 2 years ago, the central government already warned QQ, the biggest instant messenger in China, biggest social network probably as well. They warned them that the QQ points were basically becoming a threat to the RMB, the Chinese yuan. And
QQ points were becoming a threat to the Chinese currency.
They were so huge. I mean, everybody was using them. It was crazy. And they realized that virtual currency was getting so big that something had to be done about it. So from that point on, people knew that something would be happening. It's basically the big sites. They have their own virtual currency systems, but they don't run their own exchanges. I mean, there's people doing this on the sites where you can change the points to products or things.
And so that will continue. It'll just become more of a black market. That.
So I don't think that's going to be a big change.
But they have put hundreds of millions of dollars out of business, hasn't it, in various business models? I guess they're more aggressive ones.
Yeah, it's sure. The most aggressive ones, of course, they won't work. But I think there will be no other change, actually.
Business as usual.
Yeah, I mean, there will always be ways to change points of money and to use virtual currency for other things. It's maybe not in a completely legal way, but there's always ways in China. People are very inventive and coming up with new and innovative ways to deal with the loss.
Yeah. Now you talked a little about social networking. Is there any kind of social networking built into still games, or is that going to come in the future? Are you going to integrate with stuff like Facebook or?
Well, actually, we're working very hard on these things. It's at this point in China, we mainly have the best social networking functions. It's part of the password function we have, but it's not enough. We're now seeing that actually social networks are becoming competitors, like Kaishin 1001, the people you're going to meet next week. Those are the new competitors. They were not competitors a year ago. Mm. But the social networking sites in China are more gaming sites than real social networks. People there, they don't really post their private life and their pictures anymore. They post their high scores and they post their screenshots from the games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually something I underestimated myself. I didn't really see it coming. It's something from the last couple of months. So, yes, we're going to react to this and do something about it.
Can you explain that a little bit more? The big thing has become, is it trash talking? And, here's my screenshot. Or is it friendly, open, like, hey, here's...
It's actually, the system pushes you to do it. It's automatically posted for you. It's extremely viral. Cushing is forcing you to post these things, actually, on the site. But also send out things to your friends. You have to post your address book in there, for example.
You can't stop hearing from your friends, right?
Not true. And, I mean, it wouldn't work outside China, probably, but it does work here. And I don't like it myself, but apparently Chinese don't mind. I mean, they have a lot of time on their hands. They got a cool, got a message. Oh, you beat my score. Oh, I'm gonna beat them back. If I was, you know, in Europe or the US or Australia, people would get these messages all the time. They'd be annoyed, like, come on, another message I want to see. Here in China, it's different. Most people have so much time and nothing to do. They're like happy to see that. So he beat my high score. Oh, I'm going to get it. It's a very different concept.
So effectively, what we're saying is Baijin is out there using an aggressive address book spam to drive traffic, and people are okay with it.
Right, yeah. That's exactly how it is. The market here is so different from the market outside China. It's the things that work here would never work outside China. If I look at the pop-ups, for example, on our website, I always assume that the pop-up would be bad for the website. Actually, we don't see any change in traffic. If you put pop-ups on there, there's just exactly the same amount of people going to the site as people if you wouldn't have pop-ups. It doesn't deter people. They don't mind.
I couldn't quite put any stats on that in the US, though, but I would imagine that would lead to some sort of drop. A lot of sites do have pop-ups, right? So maybe it's not so bad in the US.
Yeah, because it's making money, and it's, you know, if people need money, they may do it. But I think generally people complain about pop-ups. You don't even get complaints.
You're right. Could this be because China's still in the state of change and not all these people are engaged in what they're going to be doing yet? Or?
No, it really has to do with the fact that people like a chaotic look on the website. Give an example. When I first started the first plugin website, I used a design from Holland to get started. A very clean, nice design, very easy to find, guy to write games, all in categories, and, you know, not too much advertising, simple basically. And we launched it, and we drove some traffic there. You know, people started playing the games, but it didn't come back. Like, what are we doing wrong? You know, what's... And you know, we tried it for about a month, and sort of started, people, you know, some people are coming back, but most people just came once and didn't come back. It's very weird. And yeah, so I thought, okay, maybe we have to do it to write games, or we didn't really know. And then I thought to my team, we said, well, you know, let's give it a try. It's a very Chinese-looking site. I didn't really believe in it, actually. I thought, you know, it's going to be even worse, probably, if you're going to have this, you know, very flashy site. And we said, okay, let's give it a try. So we built a Chinese website with, you know, with blinking ads, with sort of chaotic look, with pop-ups, with, yeah, really, in my opinion, very bad-looking, terrible-looking, actually. We launched it. And from that moment on, it started growing. People came back and started coming back. We drove traffic there, and then people stayed and came back. It completely blew me off. I was like, China is so different. In every single country in the world, even India, we use a similar design for our website, except for China. Design doesn't work. China is really different.
Why do you think people are attracted to a more chaotic look?
I think they're used in life already to a more chaotic life. If you go on the streets, you look at all the neon advertising, the sound blaring from all the stores, the honking cars, the people screaming. They're used to it. And they're sort of looking for them on the internet as well. I feel they may not feel happy when it's too quiet somehow. That's the only thing I can think of. It's probably the amount of people they're used to a chaotic life.
That's interesting. That would say that maybe a third world country state third world, but I mean Shanghai is cleaning itself up pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, but look, if you look on the streets here, it's still extremely chaotic. I don't know. I've never seen any real good explanation for this, and that we really saw this on our website. And for me, it's just,
this is what they want.
Yeah.
Keep them happy. Slight change of topic, but it's something I'm interested in. What do you know about people faking their Alexa rankings in China? Is that something that's common?
It used to be common, but nobody looks at Alexa anymore.
So what do people look at? Trust on the metric?
There's not much you can trust. The whole thing is, people have been doing it for so long in China, nobody really believes in the figures anymore. Nobody looks at them anymore. There is no real good measure to measure them. You may look at ComScore, but then, you know, they're missing the whole part below 15 years old, which is a huge part of the Chinese market. So there's no real good measure to look at size.
What's the best guess?
Well, I mean, what we do, we look at the IDC data ourselves. We know people in the IDC that can see what competitors are doing, how much
the data centers.
Data centers, yeah.
So you go to the data centers and you go,
I mean, there's no objective there, objective third party data. It's people used to do it a lot to sort of to fool the VCs. Yeah. As a foreigner, I feel bad when I read those things. This, it still happens. I mean, yeah, competitors going out there saying we're so big, we're doing this. You just know it's not true. But, you know, what can you do?
I mean, coming from the outside, I've got to have something to look at. I don't know what to look at. If I can't look at Alexa, what can I look at? Because I can't trust people just...
No, I know. No, it's there. You can look. I mean, I would say look at ComScore. If you look at something like ComScore, that gives probably the best guess, best you get. Alexa certainly doesn't work here. It's been game so much over the years. It's nobody trusted. It's 3 years ago, you could use it, not anymore. It's so useless here. And nobody has installed it either. I mean, the install base is too low.
Right.
That's what makes it easy to game it. So ComScore you could use... Yeah, that's about it. And yeah, because I wouldn't trust internal data from companies.
In terms of moving to China, I'm interested to know, do you like it? I mean, you live here, obviously, but do you like it? Are you happy in China?
I love it.
If you could live somewhere else, would you?
Eventually, yes.
Where would you?
I wouldn't live here my whole life. I like the valley, actually.
Silicon Valley.
Yeah. I like the lifestyle there in a way. I like
clean and organized.
Yeah, but there's still the entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. That's what I need. That's what I love in China. People are very entrepreneurial. They really want to go for it.
Right.
Yeah. What I also would like to do maybe is eventually maybe do something like setting up a wine somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand would be an idea. More, you know, but then not yet. I'm still too.
You can still Silicon Valley place, right? Then you got Napa and all anyway.
Yeah, true. That's quite expensive there. That's
Yeah, once you make one, you'll be home around, you'll be fine.
Then maybe easier, that's so. But, no, but it's, you know, I love China. I like the people here, they're so hardworking, they're so entrepreneurial. They, you know, for them, risk is a good thing. It's, I don't like people who are very risk averse. Especially when working with them, I always feel like, you know, I see risk, but I feel like risk is an opportunity because, you know, I want to give it a try anyway. And that's what I like. People just go for it. They just, they think about something, they don't write a business plan. They don't have meetings for weeks or months and do something. No, they think about it for a day and just,
One of the things that I see working with a lot of people offshore is I'd be a little bit uncomfortable about working with people from China online just due to the quality of work. Like, how do you deal with that?
Well, you have to manage them differently. You have to manage them directly. You have to be there. I mean, like in the game studio here, you have to really check on a daily basis on what they're doing, how they're doing it. Outsourcing is always a bit dangerous here. You have to really manage it much better than you would in the US or in Europe. Just don't wait until they deliver something. Now, but check it on maybe on a daily basis or at least on a weekly basis. What would they be doing? Are they going in the right direction? Are they saying the same things as they're producing? Don't trust everybody, you know, right away. That's very important. The thing is, if you find the right people for the right companies, it certainly could work in a more easy way. But especially when you start working with a new company with new people, check them on very regularly.
And then in general for expats, for someone who was going to move to China, I'm fascinated by China. If I wanted to move to China and get started here, I mean, you've blazed a trail. What would be your advice to someone like him?
Well, learn Chinese. Mm-hmm. That's a mistake I made, I think, originally. I should have learned more Chinese. It would have made my life a lot easier. I still need translators for meetings, because you want to make sure you understand everything. Second of all, is spend some time here before you get started. Build your network. Mm-hmm. If you're really out of a plane, you cannot set up a business here, because you just don't know how it works. Yeah. It's different from what you read the official laws. I mean, things work differently.
Right.
You need to know the right people. And
what country? Right?
Well, not the third world, but it's... In a way, it's a first world country here in Shanghai, but some of the things are still done the old way. Mm. You need your network. If you need your network here, you cannot rely on regulations. And you need to really understand how it works.
Any other suggestion?
Find a good business partner. I think that's very important.
A local business partner.
It's like for us to know, Gary really built it. It's the foreigner could have never built it. I mean, I don't have the technical background. Even if I had, I couldn't have done it. Mm. If there are so many regulations you have to go through, and you need to know the right people, and as a foreigner you're going to do it. You're going to fail. So find a good Chinese business partner, then the chances of success are a lot higher. On your own you can't do it. If you're going to work with foreign companies, for example, if you look at what Google's been doing or Yahoo over the years here, none of them have really been successful. The main reason is that they're too dependent on the mother company. If you do something, make sure you're independent, that you can decide what to do, that you don't have to wait for them to make decisions. An example, last year we had the earthquake in China. Mm-hmm. Then it was a 3-day national mourning period that all the sites had to close down. Mm-hmm. We were informed about it Sunday at 3 a.m. to do this. If you had to wait for your headquarters in the valley, for example, to wake up, that would be like 18 hours later, and get their approval to do this. Maybe they need that meeting today. You're going to be too late. I mean, the company are punished for this because they didn't close their sites. Mm. Now, that's the sort of thing. You need to be able to be flexible and react quickly. If you have to wait for your headquarters to make a decision, you're going to be too late. Because a lot of entrepreneurs can take decisions right away, within 5 minutes, basically.
And I know what needs to be done.
If you cannot do that, you're going to lose. Google has so much trouble in China, and I think it's mainly because, they're not independent. They cannot do. They probably know what to do, but they cannot do it because headquarters is telling them, I don't think it's right. And it's stupid. They're not independent. So if you do something for another company, make sure you get your independence and you can run your own business here the way you think it should be done. Otherwise, it won't work.
Cool. Is there anything we haven't talked about you'd like to talk about?
No. Not that it comes to mind right now.
I know, I've asked you a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Some of you have asked you a lot of stuff.
That's fun. It's a bit of it. For me, China is a great country. This is where it's happening right now. Even though there's a recession, there's still growth. People are still looking at the future and still positive.
I don't actually believe there is a recession in China. I mean, I hear like Dubai, they're like stop all the building here, but the Chinese just like keep building it. I mean, everywhere we see, I've never seen anything like this with so much construction. I've never seen this.
Well, it's a lot less than a couple of years ago, actually. A lot less. you see the Pudong skyline, right? On the other side of the
not really sure.
Well, there's this river in the field to the other side of all these skyscrapers.
Oh, yeah.
They were building that. That was amazing 10 years ago, maybe less than 8 years ago. That was crazy. This is
amazing. Absolutely amazing. Mark, well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.